Great, thank you. Well, it's good to be here, and we're looking at Psalm 57. So do keep that open, maybe with your Bible to hand, as we look at that together. Because in these times, the anxiety levels for most of us, maybe practically all of us, are raised right up. I mean, some of us are naturally anxious. Some of us, generally are not so anxious, but what we're finding is that pretty much all of us have shifted up the scale of anxiety, haven't we? Those who are naturally anxious find themselves anxious a lot more. Those who are normally less so, at least are finding themselves a bit anxious. Kind of everyone's moved on up the scale. And what we're going to do today is we're going to look at this Psalm 57, to hopefully speak into our anxious times, the times that we live in today, with the anxiety about going out or taking part in an event or going to get to a restaurant or to school or whatever it would be. Let's use the words of this psalmist to speak into that. And what we find right at the beginning, straight away, the psalmist cuts straight to the chase. Verse one, the psalmist calls on God and calls for mercy. And it's a deep cry. If you look at verse two, I cry out to you. It's not a shallow feeling. A cry out, take refuge until this disaster has passed. This is a cry deep from the heart of the writer. And you can see why. Verse four says, look, I'm in the midst of lions, ravenous beasts. They're biting and snapping at me. Basically, I'm in hostile circumstances amongst hostile people for the songwriter. For us, perhaps it's not the people, but it's the circumstances with the virus and the fear that goes with that. And it feels like it's snapping at us and biting at us. Look how the psalmist describes it. They have bites, the teeth of spears, the tongue of swords. There's real bite and there's real hurt in there. Sharp swords. Let's be clear, the psalmist is in a place of desperation. The psalmist feels trapped. You can see in verse 6, they spread a net for my feet. I'm bowed down in distress. They've dug a pit for me. The psalmist is not in a good place. It's perfectly reasonable for the psalmist to feel anxious about even leaving their front door and going out, an anxiety that perhaps some of us share today. But what I want us to do now is stick with the psalm and see what words and phrases the psalmist has woven in to those cries to God and cries of desperation. Verse one, back to the beginning again. There's the call for mercy, but in God, the psalmist writes, I take refuge. I come under the shadow of your wings, in other words, under your protection, deliberately moving myself under the protection of God. Verse two, I cry out to God. It's a God who vindicates me. Now that's a long word, but that means God sets the person right. It says, look, actually, you are right by me all along. God vindicates. Verse three, he sends from heaven and saves, literally sends someone down to save. And then there's that statement of God's love and faithfulness there. God, he sends forth his love, he sends forth his faithfulness. So what the psalm writer is doing, the psalm writer is talking about their desperate situation, no holds barred, nothing held back, but setting it against an even bigger backdrop of the love and the faithfulness of God, the bigger reality that God is there, he's faithful, and he will protect. So verse six again, the reality of their plight. They spread a net for me. They dug a pit for me to fall into. But notice, then there's a sense of upturn that they've fallen into their own pit. And you can almost hear the psalm writer doing that. If you watch The Simpsons, there's that character on The Simpsons, Nelson. He goes, ha ha, whenever something bad happens to someone. You can almost hear the songwriter seeing that the baddies have fallen into their own pit and going, ha ha, you know, it's turned back on them. And then verse 7 again, the declaration, my heart is steadfast. In fact, it's even mentioned twice. My heart is steadfast, my heart is steadfast. I come into you for protection. But then it pushes on. I will sing and make music. Wake up my soul to make music. Now, what I want us all to do now is to take part in this little exercise. Wake up my soul. What that actually means is to slap yourself around the face. Wake up my soul and sing music. So that, well done, Isaac, you've got the idea. Let's all slap our faces to wake ourselves up. Not each other's, Lucy. Wake up my soul to make music. Now the momentum of the psalm is now building. See, the psalmist is not just going to do a private at-home sing-along to a music, a YouTube worship track. Then verse 9, I will praise you among the nations, among the people. And I'm not going to stay at home. I'm going to go public with this praise. I'm going to go out there and start declaring it. Why? Well, verse 10 has the answer. For great is your love. It reaches to the heavens, faithfulness to the skies. You know, it's so big, so high that even if we try to reach up to contain it, we couldn't do that. It reaches to the skies. You see, the praise of a psalmist isn't baseless. It's not just saying, oh, I'm just gonna praise it. It has a reason. It has a foundation. It's based on the reality of God, who is love, who is faithful. So hopefully you can see through this poem how the writer has expressed their plight, their desperation, but mixed in, woven in their faith in God. So I think there's three aspects that I want to highlight, three things going on. But first of all, and I'm going to go really low tech now by holding pieces of paper up in front of the camera. First of all, there is honesty. There's honesty by the songwriter about what's going on in their life. They're not in denial. They're not covering it up. They're not downplaying it. They're just being honest. They're saying, for me, life sucks. And being honest about that. But alongside that honesty, there is decision, a clear decision that they will call on God. They will put themselves under God's protection and they will go on to praise. They will make their own worship. They will declare about God and they will go public with that. That's a clear decision that they have made. Life sucks, but I will do this. In putting myself in God's care and declaring his praise. But now for the third thing, I want you to notice something else about this poem, something that I've not yet drawn attention to in verse 5 and verse 11. That's the aspect of outburst. Suddenly, the songwriter comes out with this outburst. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Your glory be over all the earth. Sort of an adrenaline rush of praise, if you like. Now, that's verse 5 and verse 11. Interestingly, let's go back and look at verse 5. Where is it located in this poem? It's right down there. Right down in the bottom, in the heart, in the pit of despair. Right in there, in the yuckiness of the situation for the psalm writer. And it's right there, suddenly has this outburst. Be exalted, O God, your glory over all the earth. It's like, whoa, where did that come from? Well, it comes from the combination of the honesty and the decision enables, allows that outburst. Being real with God and coming into his care, suddenly this outburst becomes possible. Now, one final thing I want to say. This is for the psalm nerds amongst you. I'm going to talk about the structure of this poem. Maybe if you did your A-level or degree in English, yeah, you can see this as well. Look at verses 1 to 3 and verses 7 to 10. They kind of run in parallel to each other, talking about the plight and then what the psalmist is doing about it. They run in parallel. That's called a step parallel, because they're saying pretty much the similar things or the same things, but maybe with a slight shift, a slight difference between verses 1 and 3 and 7 to 10, because 7 to 10 has more of that praise and that sense of upturn. But it's called a step parallel. But that leaves in the middle the core, verses 4 to 6. That's where the raw, honest reality of the bad circumstance, the ravenous beast attacking, the spreading of the net, the digging of the pit. That's the place. Within that place of darkness comes the outburst of praise, right in the center of verse 5 there, as well as echoed in the conclusion at verse 11. Now, you could understand if the psalm writer started with the honesty and the pooiness of the situation, but then had a shift and decided to praise and go into God's protection and then built momentum from there and ended up at the conclusion of verse 11, be exalted, O God. We could understand that. That would be a logical progression, wouldn't it? But that's not actually what the psalm gives us. The psalm has that same outburst that's at the conclusion in verse 11, right there in the middle of the slimy pit, in the middle of verses 4 to 6, verse 5. In the harshness of the circumstances comes this outburst, be exalted, O God, above the heavens. And that is then echoed at the end of the psalm. Well, what about us in our anxiety-inducing times, our dark place? I want you to maybe keep your finger in Psalm 57, but if you can, flip right into the new part of the Bible, to Paul's letter to the Philippians. So pretty near the end of the Bible, not quite right at the end, but to Philippians. It's a small letter, it's only four chapters, so it can be hard to find because you can flip pages and miss it. But in Philippians, there's chapter 4, and I'm just going to pick out verses 6 and 7 of Philippians 4. Okay, I'm going to read it out. Don't worry if you can't find it. Philippians 4, 6 and 7. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. It seems to me that Paul, in writing, do not be anxious, it seems to me that he's actually got the same ingredients. He's got the honesty, because he says, in every situation. Now, every situation, he's not just saying in the good situations. He's not just saying that as a Christian, life should always be peachy. He's saying in every situation. In other words, including the rubbish situations, including the fearful situations, including the anxious situations. Go into this with your prayers and petitions with thanksgiving. But, of course, he started the sentence, do not be anxious. That's like almost a command. So there's the decision. Decide. Do not be anxious. But I know, as well as you know, but I can't phone you up and you say, actually, I'm really worried and I'm not going out and I'm not prepared to meet up yet. So it's all fine. I know as well as you, but I can't say, do not be anxious, And from that phone call onwards, you will magically stop being anxious. It doesn't work like that, does it? You know, I can't, no matter how reassuringly I say over the phone, do not be anxious, you're not going to suddenly flip and magically not be anxious. But that's why he links it with turn to prayer and petition with thanksgiving. In other words, there's a base, there's a reason, there's a fuel, something you can do, a decision you can make. It's not simply don't be anxious, but turn the anxiety energy that you've got to prayer. Put yourself under the protection and the refuge of God and make a decision to be there and start praising him. And you'll find that that shifts how you feel. You'll find that that starts to make a difference to your anxiety, because we have a solid reason to look to God with love, care, and faithfulness of God all being absolute realities, the bigger reality, the bigger backdrop to our situation. But one final thing, the third aspect, if we look a little bit around these verses in Philippians 4, back to verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. I say it again, rejoice. And if you look at verse 10, he's moved on now, but he says, I rejoice greatly in the Lord about the concern and so on. And if you flip back to chapter 3, verse 1, rejoice in the Lord. The verses around the bigger context for Paul writing, do not be anxious, turn to prayer and petition, is one of rejoicing. So there's the outburst. We've had the honesty, we've had the decision, and there's the outburst in there. Remember, when Paul was writing this, his own situation was, he was under arrest, he was in prison in some form or other. He didn't know how long he had to live in case the Romans decided to bump him off, or the other baddies who were out to get him finally had their way and had him executed. From that position, he writes, rejoice. I say it again, rejoice. There's the outburst right there, even in Paul's own dark situation. The result of the honesty, the decision, and allowing the rush of praise adrenaline to flow through your body by the power of the Spirit, the result of those three things is the peace of God guarding your heart, becoming like a force field around your heart.